Accession number 20782, Reel 6.
This is Limerick, Reel 6.
Right. I really felt, you know, like crying. And I said, well, thank you very much for having me. And just a moment, he said, wait a few minutes. He went out and came back with a sweet, with a bag of dulcet sweets. And he gave them to me. And I just said, thank you very much, but I don't really need sweets. And I walked out of there, and that was the end. I said, my regards to your wife, because she was introduced me, he introduced me to his wife when I came in. Anyway, I went back to the place where I was staying, this Cripplewood. They didn't know anywhere about it that I went to see this family, and they didn't know that I wanted to get out of there, because I felt that I am not doing very well at school, you know, with all the extra chores I have to perform, running with the dogs and cooking and ironing and washing. And I needed more time for studies, because my English, in spite of the fact that I was at school, my English wasn't too bad, but I needed some help, you know, with writing and also with math and so on. And because I couldn't understand very well what was said in the classroom, and I had to concentrate much more on understanding the things. When the school certificate came, I didn't manage to get all five subjects that I was taking. I had to retake a couple. It's English that brought me down. It's funny enough, I passed literature, English literature, but not the English language. And the pressing and things like that were difficult for me to shorten. And also something else I failed in, I don't know, can't remember. I think it was math as well. So I passed Polish and history and English literature. That was a sure subject. So I felt that if I really want to do it again, I must have complete, more time to study. Anyway, I went back to Cricklewood, and I didn't say. I just sat down, wrote a letter to my mother, and told her what happened. And that was that, and I stayed there. I think that a month passed by. I was still in the same place. And then one day, I received a letter from this Mr. Golodets, and inside was a check for £52. He must have had a second thought about it. So then I went to the hostel and asked if they've got a place for me. And the matron there said yes, in about a week she could take me. And just about 2 days before, I told the couple where I was staying that I'm going to go to live in the hostel because I need more time. Oh, they were absolutely, she was furious. And he was a very nice man. And he said, well, I think it might be better for you to get more time to study. Took me on the side when she wasn't listening. I think you've got too much to do here, and I don't blame you. So I packed my bags and went to the hostel. And needless to say, I had to start working. And it meant that taking the two extra subjects was a little bit off, long way to there was no time. And I also attended evening classes for shorthand typing, because I got a job with Monumental Masons in Stepney Green. And the hostel was in Wilson Green, and I had to travel. And there, with two fingers, I was typing, you know, inscriptions that are going to go on the tombstone in three copies in loving memory of so-and-so. But it was absolutely good fun, and they were very nice, two brothers, the Belasco brothers, who always joked, and they were very nice to me as well. I enjoyed the job, and by the time I managed to pass my shorthand and typing and do it properly, I found another job, which was in the West End, as a secretary with a very big firm of imitation jewelry. And very quickly, I was just an assistant to the main secretary, but then there were three bosses there. They were all brothers-in-law, married to three sisters. And one of the bosses decided that I could do more, and he taught me how to do bookkeeping. And it was still sort of simple, without computers or anything, just a double entry. And after work, he stayed an hour with me and showed me exactly how to do the books. And I started doing certified invoices in those days, because they had an import license for importing loose pearls and beads from Czechoslovakia. And there was a Board of Trade limitation on the imports, and they used to get quite a large license. And everything they sold had to be also in certified invoices and copies sent where they exporting. They were only allowed to import if they export again. The goods came here, they were made up in the workshop there. We had a large workshop with a lot of Greek girls who were very, very good at making very elaborate pearl necklaces, and they were beautifully done, sort of with needles, two needles working together. And then also bracelets and earrings and all kinds of things. In fact, I helped in designing some of the stuff, because I was always interested in making things rather than studying things. You know, I was more artistic in a way than sitting over books. So I got on extremely well. They sacked the secretary after about a year, and I was doing everything. The typing and the bookkeeping and feeding them lunch, because they all had lunch on the premises. And I enjoyed the job. And by then, I already moved one of my bosses there knew somebody who owned a flat and went abroad, and the flat was empty. And he got in touch with him, and he asked whether I could take the flat over and pay whatever the amount he pays into his bank account, so the rent is met every month. The man never came back because he did something naughty abroad, and he was wanted here. I don't know what he was doing in those days. It was early, 1950 or something. And I got into the flat. It was owned by United Dominions Trust in Palace Gardens Terrace in Notting Hill Gate, which was very, very convenient. I had only a bus ride to the West End where the jewelry firm was. I was getting quite a good salary as well. But you see, that secretary was fired, not because she wasn't any good or whatever, but because she looked at the clock. The moment, 5 o'clock came, it doesn't matter, rain or shine, she had her hat on and her coat on. And one day, I think, it was one of the bosses was a bachelor, and he did it, I think, purposely. At 5 minutes to 5, he called her in for a very long letter to Czechoslovakia, which had to be very diplomatic in those days. Anyway, she took the letter and she came back with her book, put it in the drawer, and put her coat, and he came out because he didn't hear the typewriter going. And he said, "Miss Phillips, where is my letter?" And she said, "It's 5 minutes past 5. I'm leaving now. I'll do it first thing in the morning." And he said, "No, you won't. You won't do it first thing in the morning. You do it tonight, or else you won't come in the morning." And I was sitting there. I was in a terrible sort of state because I felt he's doing it purposely. I didn't say anything. I just went out into the workshop there. The next thing I heard, the door slam, and off she went. And he came out to the workshop and he said, "Do you think you can cope with everything?" I said, "I'll try." But I said, "Not for the same money." So there it was, you know. I stayed with them for quite a long time. I can't remember, it must have been 5 or 6 years. But they helped me a lot. First of all, I got the flat through them because it was a friend of theirs. And I moved out of the hostel. And my journey was much shorter, so I didn't have to spend so much money. Secondly, by that time, my mother got out of Poland. I didn't know, but she had a boyfriend after I left, who was another doctor. And they applied several times for permission to leave. And she got the permission, but he didn't, because they wouldn't let doctors out. They needed them again. So eventually, she said she would. She go. She managed to get a transit through France and go to Israel. And that was the only way to go. By then it was, 48, it was 1949, 1950, Israel was already Israel then, it wasn't Palestine. And she said she would come to France and maybe wait. He was going to apply again and try again when she left. And while she was in France, again through my boss, he had to go with me to the to get a visa and all the bits and pieces because I still had I didn't have a passport at all because when I came here, I came on a cart, on a group children's cart, and then I had to make a passport to go to visit her in France. And she also wanted me, while she was still in Poland, she actually wanted me to come for a visit. And I wasn't keen on going, you know, visiting. But the only passport I could have had by then was a Polish passport because I wasn't even 5 years yet in England to apply for naturalization. So I had a Polish passport I made, and I never used it other than for going to France and back. I never went to Poland with that passport. So when she came and she managed to get into France, that's where she met Mr. Landau's mother, who was in the same hotel, and also somebody else's mother, Mrs. Ettinger, who was, this was the boy that was, I met at the gymnasium dance, and he came here as well. In actual fact, he came a transport before me, and his mother came later as well. She was in France, and then from France she came here, he brought her. So my mother was in France in a small hotel with Mrs. Lander in the same hotel, and so on. And I got my visa in the Polish passport to go and visit my mother in France. And when I was there, I met Mrs. Lando. I had about 3 weeks holiday, and I met Jerzy there because he was visiting his mother as well, George, I call Jerzy. And then he brought his mother over to England, and the only way I could do it, and my mother said, "Well, I got a transit to go to Israel. Are you coming with me?" I said, "No way, I'm not coming to Israel." I said, "Better enough here in the Orthodox lot, but Israel, no, thank you." So, anyway, it's still a volcano, and I had enough of upheaval. I just felt that, you know, this one war, independence, no independence, this country never, look at it today. So, you know, I was very sort of skeptical about what is going to happen to there. And I was quite happy here. I had my friends, I had my work, and I had a flat as well, which was fantastic. So, my mother said, what are we going to do? Am I going back to Poland? I can't come to England. What are you going to do? I said, well, I go back and I see what I can do to bring you over. And the only way to bring my mother over was, in those days, 1950, on a domestic permit. And I found a family here who needed somebody. And I went to the Ministry of Labor in those days in Regent Park somewhere and got all the papers. And they had to sign that they needed help because he wasn't very well and all this business, and they needed somebody to help in the household. And this is how she came. And she stayed in, she was in near Finchley Road in Greencoat Gardens. And I was in Notting Hill, in Palace Gardens. But after a short time, she started going to evening classes and learning English. And then this man, I think, I don't know whether he died or whether she wasn't needed. And she found another elderly lady who needed looking after, who had very well-to-do children. They were delighted for my mother to look after this mother. So she moved, she was in Maida Vale somewhere in a flat, and she was with this lady for a few years, and I was, you know, by then I decided that I could start a business on my own. I was saving money as well, all the time. And a rep who worked for the company that I worked. And I, in my spare time, I made a sample range. And she lived with her husband. He was also a salesman. And we created a company called Bromar. My name was Bronca, her name Margaret. And I was still working, and I made a sample range for her with the beads that I got through a supplier that was supplying my firm. But he was a young man, about a little bit older than I was. And he was very helpful. He gave me credit. I made a nice sample range of jewelry. And I gave it to this woman, the Margaret, the rep. And while she was doing the other things, our things were different, and she was trying to sell our things. And in the evening, after doing my job, I used to go to her house, and whatever orders she got, who had scales 1 to 12, or, you know, for beads, special ones, where I would work out how many of these necklaces, a dozen or two dozen, were ordered. And I organized home workers. And by then I could drive as well. And I used to take the beads with a sample, what it looks like, to the home workers. And one of them was a very good Lithuanian woman who worked also for my firm where I worked during the day. And she would make the things for us. And we had it all costed, and we took the orders. We were the sort of wholesalers. We were manufacturers selling to wholesalers. And then it went to shops. And we started getting orders. And when it got quite busy, I said to my boss, you know that I've got a firm with Margaret together, and I'm doing it in the evenings. And he looked at me and said, I knew something was going on, but what are we going to do with that? He wasn't offended or anything. And I said, well, you just have to, I won't leave you until you find somebody. So just get on your horse and find somebody quickly. And they did, you know, they found somebody, my son is here. They found somebody, and I left then. The firm took off quite well. But that wasn't really, you know, then she was of German origin, and she got a bit too demanding on me. She wanted my weekends and my evenings every time, always something more and more and more. And I got fed up. I said, I need a holiday. What am I doing it for anyway? So I packed my bag and went and I joined a group going to Israel for a 6 weeks holiday in summer. And when I came back, I didn't want to go back to this firm doing this business. And I said, you buy me out. Anyways, they bought me out. She bought me out for peanuts. And I was sitting doing nothing. Then one day my boss phones, the old boss from the firm. I said, what are you doing? I heard you're back. I said, yes, I am back. I'm having an extended holiday. He said, how about coming and helping us out of the mess? We had three since you went, and we can't find a thing. So back I went for another 3 or 4 years to this firm. And eventually, well, I met my husband there, and I said, I always wanted to, while my daughter was born, I couldn't do anything for 2 years, but when she, once she started going to, well, it was later on, I think, when both of them were in sort of a preschool, one was 4, one was 6, I decided now I'm going to take a proper course in dressmaking and pattern cutting. And I enrolled into a very well-known college in London called Katinka School of Dress Designing. And eventually I inherited it, and I ran it myself for quite... well, that's about, you know, we come to an end now, almost.
How do you feel about becoming a citizen of this country now?
I am a citizen of this
country. How do you feel about it?
I'm eternally grateful.